Hello and welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, Miami Herald's Miami Hurricanes podcast. I'm David Wilson and I am joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller Degnan, our Hurricanes beat writer here at the Herald. Susan, how's it going?
I'm back to it's going great. Really well. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Taking the weekend off, so it'll be good to get a little break here, but had to get a podcast in with you. Before we finish, because it's actually one of the more exciting weeks, I think, in a little while on the UM beat. You obviously pro day on Monday was pretty fun day, getting to talk to those guys and getting to see them work out. Obviously, some highlights in the workout, some good interviews too. I'm sure we'll talk about. Brevin Jordan was really fired up. Obviously, the scrimmage over the weekend, which we didn't get to see, but still kind of a lot to talk about from that. But we had to start with some sad news. The passing of Howard Schnellenberger over the weekend. We're going to tack on at the end here a little interview Susan did on WLRN Sundial show with Luis Hernandez that airs Monday through Thursday at 1 p.m. This aired on Tuesday. So we'll put that at the end, kind of Susan giving her thoughts about Schnellenberger's legacy and his death. And but we got to talk about it at the top. Susan, you know, it wasn't necessarily a surprise. We knew he had been in kind of declining health lately, but you never covered him, but obviously you've been on this beat as long as basically anyone who's still covering the team. You could probably sum it up as well as anyone. What did he mean to this program and really to college football? I think you really saw it just with the outpouring from all corners of the college football universe, that obviously he meant a lot beyond just down here in South Florida.
He did. He meant everything. He was a classic and a classy guy, super honest and frank and funny as heck, with a beautiful baritone bass voice that I just loved listening to. And I did know him very well. I mean, I talked a lot either on the phone or in person.
He remained a South Florida staple, obviously, with FAU stuff long after he was left Miami.
Absolutely. And he wanted to be in he loved being in the limelight. I don't blame him. I mean, everything he said was golden. He was a I think I told WLRN he was a psychologist. He was so smart and eloquent, beautifully spoken and from the heart, and just a good person who, you know, he got excited to whomever he was talking to. He got excited, show you around his office, and you know, this was this and that from Bear Bryant when he coached at Alabama, to assistant to Bear Bryant, and Joe Namath and the Dolphins, and he just had such an impact on South Florida, on Florida, on college football, but nothing more than he did at University of Miami, you know, even though, you know, somebody's getting super old and declining, you still are very sad and surprised always when they die. And he loved his wife so much and he was always talking about her, and he was so devoted to his kids and would let you know it. He always let you know what he felt, whether he was, you know, against something or for something. He wasn't embarrassed. He was just, I don't know. He had a way with words and just a good soul. And one thing I did want to mention to you was, and I did not discuss this, I didn't have much time on LRN, is he deserves to be in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And, you know, College Football Hall of Fame has a 600 winning percentage stipulation, I guess. And college record is 158, 151, and 3. But there are few people who had an impact the way Schnellenberger did on college football. Like, think about it. Almost every program he went to, I mean, he did amazing things. He gets the first national title for Miami, which was a really big deal.
Yes.
he recruited all those major players and convinced them to stay in South Florida. Yeah,
he only gets one ring there, but you know, the next two that come were his guys, foundation he built, obviously.
Yeah, amazing. You know, he created the quote unquote state of Miami. Which encompassed Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. State put a fence around the state of Miami. He goes to Florida.
There's Louisville first, right?
Louisville. He kind of, resurrected that program. He goes to, he was with the Dolphins as the offensive coordinator, but he goes to FAU, Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton. I mean, the guy builds a stadium. He, it's amazing, David.
He did everything but like go to the construction site to like put it together.
Oh my God. And he was and he was so proud of it. He always said that, it's a stadium that overlooks the Atlantic Ocean, the only one in America. But it's true. Were you there with me?
I've actually never been to a game at that stadium.
Oh my God. It's great. It's like a metal, but it's really nice. It's really super nice and festive. And it was pre-COVID, game. They had a lot of, fans that were excited about it, and they had cool stuff going on around the stadium, little events. And it's amazing. He had a stadium built at FAU. And when they started, they were Division I AA. And I think they made it to the semifinal of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that, right? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing with him in charge of the program. And he had some great quarterbacks. He had kids that got drafted. He won every bowl game he was ever in. I don't know. I can't think of it all, but
there's a lot. Yeah.
There's a lot, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And it's dumb that he's not. It really is dumb.
It is. Yeah. And especially because there is the win percentage rule that you mentioned, but they've like broken that rule a couple times. Like there's a press.
Yes, they have.
To break it for really influential guys. And when you think about what he means, as we said, not just to Miami football, which is, a top five program historically, I think inarguably, but also to college football in the way that everything runs through South Florida in college football in a lot of ways. And he's, really, really instrumental to that. I feel like I've learned a lot about him over the last year because also after Shula died about, I guess, a little less than a year, probably 10, 11 months ago now, that was kind of part of the story was Shula's role directly in turning Miami football into a powerhouse. Because as you mentioned, Schnellenberger was his offensive coordinator with the Dolphins and ends up going to Miami straight from there. And obviously the Dolphins were, becoming a powerhouse. And he brought that same kind of growth of a program out of nowhere to Miami. And I'm kind of fast, being from DC, which is such like a basketball hotbed, I'm fascinated by the ways that these parts of the countries become sports hotbeds. And obviously Miami, South Florida is like, that's the number one football hotbed. And, I think there's a lot of reasons why, you go back to like, even pre-segregation Traz Powell and stuff like that, but like, a lot of it traces back to the 70s and the 80s and Shula and Schnellenberger turning this, I talked to George Smith after Shula died, and he talked about the way that he turned George Smith, who's the athletic director at St. Thomas Aquinas, won a bunch of state championships as the football coach there. And he talked about the way Shula turned it from Miami, from like this beach town into like a football town. And I think you could probably say a lot of the same about Schnellenberger and the way that he, Miami, I'd recommend everyone check out Barry Jackson's obit, which is very good. It talks about the way that the program was kind of on the brink of like folding. And he, again, took this town that really probably didn't care that much about the Hurricanes. Probably a lot of the town didn't care about football and helped make it a football crazed town. And obviously that if you trace the growth of football in South Florida, at least part of it back to him, then you know, that's a huge reason that college football is what it is today. When you look at, you know, how many players on all these national championship teams come from the state of Miami, as he coined it. You know, even if they're not all staying in Miami, it means so much for all of college football. One other thing I did not realize is that, you know, I always knew he had the signature pipe. I never made the connection that that's why the old Sebastian logo had a pipe.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I never made that connection before.
Yeah, that's very cool. Although, that's the old Sebastian.
Right.
Now there's no tobacco. No more tobacco.
Yeah. And they got to bring it back. They got to do something this year with like this upcoming season. You know, because I'm sure they'll wear like a Schnellenberger patch or whatever or something.
Oh, yeah. They've got to do something.
Like they've got to do something. They got to bring back that logo for like something. For like, even if it's just like on their warm-ups or like the warm-up shirts they wear. Like I know they don't want to do it with the tobacco thing and, you know, the Cancer Research University, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know.
They made Sebastian, you know, before they turned him into a happy Sebastian and they turned him mean again.
Yeah. So yeah, bring back the pipe for this year, even if it's just like for a one game throwback kind of deal.
I agree. And you know back. What, David, I'm going to play some of my interviews just for me so I can kind of reminisce of Howard. I plan to do that. Just I'll be sitting in my room alone and and be wistful.
Also, I know the field at FAU Stadium is named after him. I feel like that stadium should just be named after him. I know we're not an FAU podcast, but
yeah, I agree with you 100%. I bet they do. Oh, you know, Louisville also, it's because I've been there a couple of times.
Is it Schnellenberger Field? Stuff there is named after him, like,
yeah, I think it might be
something.
His name's on something, either the Howard Schnellenberger training room or clubhouse, or I don't know what it is. There's
The Howard Schnellenberger football complex.
Oh, is that what? Yeah, I know. Just looked it up. In the stands, I could see his name big. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he means a lot to, you know, Louisville, like you mentioned with, you know, FAU now is, you know, a decent, you know, decent program, obviously out of nothing and still a young program. Sure. But Louisville at the same time, you know, they, you know, does Lamar Jackson go to Louisville if Howard Schnellenberger doesn't start to resurrect him? You know, they probably get resurrected eventually, but, you know, that's his rep, is he's like the program resurrector.
Exactly. So that's why
the record is not as good as
because look what he did, you know. But I know, like, at Oklahoma, he went to Oklahoma and he didn't do well,
right?
He said they didn't want him there, and he realized he made a mistake, that he tried to do the same thing there that he did in Miami. The difference was he knew about Miami, okay? He didn't, Oklahoma was a whole different culture, and he realized that. So,
also, it's pretty cool that he recruited Joe Namath.
Yes.
That's a good thing to throw on your resume.
Definitely. He recruited a lot of good people.
Yeah. Yeah. But Joe Namath means, like, you know, you could tell people who don't even know college football, like NFL, like, you know, Jets fans are not college football people, or New Yorkers are not college football people. If you tell them that Howard Schnellenberger recruited Joe Namath to go play at Alabama, like discovered Joe Namath or whatever, like that's a good thing to, you know, Joe Namath is one of the most famous football players of all time. Like that's a big deal. Good thing to put on the resume.
Of course.
All right. Let's do pro day first.
But I have to interrupt this for an announcement. And that's, I'm just reading the stories now and I can't believe this. Where is this? The Florida Kyle Pitts.
Yes.
Tight end. That could be, I don't know if he'll last. It could be the Dolphins' first pick, right? Now, this is unofficial, and you and I both know, because we're going to talk about the UM pro day, that unofficial is really unofficial, and that they don't – that the 40 times each NFL team does their own 40 time. I figured you knew that, but I'm not sure if listeners know that. So they all have their own – maybe a little different, but – I'm looking at NFL.com, and he turned in an unofficial 40-yard dash of 4.44 seconds.
Yeah, that's absurd.
And his other one was 4.46. And we are going to talk about Jalen Phillips. And of course, that's a tight end. Jalen Phillips, who's a defensive end for UM, did a 4.56 best. This guy did a 4.44. And then the other one I want to mention that I just read and on NFL.com is Jamar Chase.
Yep. Another potential Dolphins pick.
Yep. Another, he just ran, and I'm going to say unofficial, okay, a 4.3840. That's all. I just wanted to, just wanted to throw that out there. Anyway.
I saw a lot of people tweeting about DVD has like the all time, right? He's like 4.32 or something. Or
oh, he was crazy really fast. Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah. That's they wanted that speed.
4.28. That's what he ran at the combine. Yeah. Fourth fastest time ever. Well, fifth fastest now. It was fourth fastest at the time.
Right.
But yeah, Pro Day was pretty fun. We talked about it. Obviously, we previewed it a little bit last week. And we talked about how excited we were to see the running. And I think that did not let down. That was pretty much all those guys. And obviously, the story of the day, as you wrote about, was Jalen Phillips. But again, I think all the guys.
Oh, there were other stories of the day too. That's the thing. Yes, everybody was calling Jalen Phillips a freak and all that, and I understand that. But let me tell you, the UM kids did quite well. Quincy Roche, I know we'll talk about it, but he did fantastically. So
I'll say those 3, 4, 5 minutes, however long it was, that we thought Jalen Phillips ran a 4.46, were electric.
Exactly.
Like the broadcast is going crazy. I mean, social media was obviously going crazy, and 4.56 was the official time there. And that's still really good.
Still really good for a guy that's 260 pounds.
Yeah. Still enough. We're in my opinion, I think he is the top defensive end in this draft. It's obviously, it's an interesting defensive end draft. Usually that's a position that's super deep. This year is not as deep. Obviously you've got Greg, who we'll talk about, Greg Rousseau, who's didn't play last year. And then, you know, Jalen, when you look at the guys who were kind of in that top mix, it's Greg Rousseau, Jalen Phillips, Quiddy Pay, and I'm blanking on the Georgia defensive end's name. Try to find it. A defensive end from Georgia. I can't find his name right now, but that's kind of the clear top four. Jalen was by far the kind of the most productive of that group last year. You know, Greg obviously had the 15 sack season, but that was 2 years ago at this point. But I don't know. Yeah, Jalen, to me, he was the number one recruit in the country coming out of high school for a reason. He showed all of that off on Monday, and then obviously had the track record this season. And I don't know. He lived up to, I think he exceeded the hype, honestly, at Miami. And I think he kept doing it basically all the way through his last workout ever at Greentree Field. Like
he did.
I mean, I don't know if he's going to go top 10 or whatever, but to me, he kind of solidified himself not only as a first round pick, but I think he firmly should be in that mix to be the first defensive end picked. You know, again, I don't know enough about all these guys. Like, I can't even remember the Georgia guy's name, obviously, but, I have a hard time imagining there's a better combination of production and like tools in this draft at that spot than Jalen Phillips.
Yeah. I mean, I still think it's going to be interesting ever. I mean, I agree with you. I have a feeling he's going to go in front of, Greg Rousseau, who basically 1 year college football and then another two games before he broke his ankle. But I still, Jalen Phillips, 8 sacks. I think he was great. I mean, he is a physical freak, and he was interesting. You know, he's had a lot of. Here's what it comes. He has had some physical ailments, but like he was really eloquent also in saying, "Look, it's football.
Yeah.
Everybody gets injured. I mean, it's everybody gets injured and." I'm fine now. My wrist, we had intricate, really smashed his wrist in a scooter, in a car accident, scooter/car accident. He was on a scooter. And he had concussions and stuff, but he said, my wrist is fine. Did you see me today? And he was right. He said, you know, it's what I've done now. Look at me. I'm fine. I'm better than fine, actually. So the only thing is, I just keep thinking of 15 and a half sacks.
Yeah.
I can't help it. I keep thinking 15 sacks.
So the second most in the country behind Chase Young, who's like already one of the five best defensive ends in the NFL.
So I Jalen Phillips is awesome. He's super smart, really smart. Again, really.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And yeah, I touched on it at the top, but some really good interviews we had with all these guys on Monday. And he was like, I mean, I think Brevin like stole the show as he often does. But yeah, but just in terms of like Jalen talking about his path and the idea of like, you know, retiring and like falling out in love with football, falling back in love with football, all that.
Very honest, mature, has perspective. You can tell he's older. Greg Rousseau, love him. I mean, he's just such a nice kid. Just and he means it, you know, when he says he's blessed and he's so happy to be back with his guys, you know, from UM. It's all from the heart. And he's big. He's a big long spider, you know, he's a big I'm so excited to be able to see him play. Actually, I guess because he hasn't played this year, and he was one of my favorites. Such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I don't think you're taking a risk drafting him, but I think you're taking a risk drafting him really high, if that makes sense at all. And Jalen, to me, you can't go wrong. I think either of them are going to be good, but I understand teams worrying about drafting Greg Rousseau super high because, again, he doesn't have a big body of work, you know,
yeah.
He played this past season. But I still think, come on, 15 and a half sacks, that can't be lucky, can it?
No, I mean, I guess the criticism is like he doesn't have moves, like he didn't have moves, but – you know, uh-huh. He has those things you can't teach, which is that size and the motor. Like that's how he got his sacks. It's just, he is bigger than you. He is faster than you. And he's going to try a lot harder than you to get to the quarterback than you are to protect the quarterback. And I mean, that's a pretty good, like, that's a good starting point. Like he's, like you're saying, like no coach is going to be frustrated to have him. When you think of the guys who come in as like physical freaks like that, the way, and he is a freak in a way that not even like Jalen Phillips is a freak, just because, you know, he's 6'7" and is like, when you say he's like, when you talk about how he says he's blessed, like, it's almost like you can't even believe like this is all happening because, again, 3 years ago, he was this skinny 200-pound safety. And now he's going to be a first round pick as a 260-pound defensive end.
200. Listen to this, 266. He has an 83 1/4-inch wingspan.
Yeah, this is absurd. And the way that those guys fail with those physical tools is, and you see it a lot in basketball, is like the center who just is playing basketball because he's tall. Like, does he really love basketball? That's not a question with Greg at all. Like, he's going to work hard. He's like, understands. So like, he's kind of blessed with these tools to be this great player. I mean, he could have, you know, a lot of kids who were a wide receiver all throughout, and he was like an all-state wide receiver as a junior at Champagnat. Like, he could have been like, I want to go play wide receiver somewhere. But he was like, you know, obviously Mark Richt told him and Manny Diaz told him, you're going to be like a first round pick potentially as a defensive end if you commit yourself to it. He got that motor and the personality, the coachability clearly. You know, you think of how much he has bulked up. Like, it's hard to imagine him failing. Like, is he ever going to like be the complete package, is like in terms of moves and all that kind of stuff as Jalen Phillips is? Maybe not, but like, he's gonna, like, he's got those things you can't teach. And I don't think there's really any real red flags with him. The only red flag is the lack of production. The lack of just the sheer lack of reps. There's like, he's going to nail all of his interviews. He's nailing the combine stuff. He nails the production level. I guess, you know, he doesn't nail the necessarily like the versatility or the moves, like the, you know, just technical stuff to the same degree. But there's not red flags there. Everything that he doesn't do well is teachable, and there's no reason to think he's not going to be willing to learn.
Well, you were talking about moves, right? Maybe he doesn't have the moves or whatever, whoever. Quincy Roche has the moves.
Yeah.
Okay. And he was fabulous. And I love his personality. And I have since the start. Totally stand up, classy guy, mature as can be, so polite, right? And truly a nice guy. Truly. Yeah. I mean, they're all nice guys, but I mean, I just love Quincy Roche. And he just kind of understated and I believe appreciated. I think
it's overshadowed by a guy like Greg Rousseau, who, as you mentioned, is an 80 whatever wingspan, and Jalen Phillips, who was the former number one recruit in the country. Like, it's naturally going to get overlooked a little bit.
We talked about that. He measured just over 6'2", 243 pounds. Mm-hmm. He led the UM players at the combine at UM Pro Day with 23 reps on the bench press, which is a 225 pounds. He led all players. He ran the 40 in 4.62, which
really
is
good.
Really good for a guy his size. He led everybody with, he didn't lead actually, I'm sorry, with the vertical jump, but he had a 32 and a half vertical jump, and he had a 9.11 broad jump. He did really, really well. And I've been looking at some of his film. If you look at some of it, I mean, he's this guy, talk about moves.
Yeah.
I mean,
really polished.
He motors inside, outside, whatever, of the offensive lineman. I mean, he's really good. He gets to the quarterback. And I know maybe he didn't have as productive a year this year. I think he's going to be a if he stays healthy, a consistent NFL player who plays for a while.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he was like pretty upfront. Like, I think I'm a 3-4 outside linebacker. Which we talked about last week, just his size. Like, you know, you don't see a lot of hand in the dirt defensive ends who are 6'2". Like, you know, those guys are 6'4", 6'5".
Exactly.
So he knows, I mean, and I mentioned it last week, he had that interception against Clemson that got called back. So we know he can drop into coverage a little bit. He needed to show the speed there. He needed to show like the shuttle type, like, quick change of direction stuff. Mm-hmm. And he did all of that at the combine. To me, like, I don't know if he'll go in the second round. Again, it's a weird draft because it's not a whole lot of edge guys, right? Super highly on draft boards. But I mean, to me, he's like clear second day pick at this point.
I'd be shocked
I'm never shocked with anything, but
shocks me in the draft. But I'd be surprised if he went past the third round, right?
Yeah, I think he showed that, you know, he's got, like you said, he's just gonna be good in the NFL. Like, he's gonna be solid.
Yeah. Good in every way. Just a hard worker, good guy. He's never gonna get in trouble. I don't think. I'll take that back too. Who knows? But
yeah, you never know. But
I'm both thumbs up on Roche.
Last one. I mean, I guess Jose Borregales kicked also. We didn't really.
Yeah. And he did great. I think, I
mean, he's kicker one, like, he's a kicker. He's going to get picked whenever a team decides they want to take a kicker. Right. Like,
yeah. And I love it. He was honest. I love talking to him too. And he said that he told us that what he was working on most was his kickoffs.
Yep.
And that he did really well in his kickoffs. He said, my kickoffs have gotten a lot better. And we didn't watch. He did well. He was hitting field goals also. So, and everybody saw what he's done on national TV and whatever. 57-yard field goal. He's good. Really good. So I think, I'm always think kickers are more important than it seems anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
I just think they're so important.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's going to get drafted probably somewhere early on the third day, it sounds like. But you never know with kickers. It's just who thinks they need one. You know, if 2018 feel good about their kickers, then not going to get drafted as high. The last guy, Brevin Jordan, I think kind of solidified himself as either the number two or number three tight end, second round pick type of guy.
Or some people think It's funny. I read some things that said, you know, he hurt himself with his time or whatever, with his times. But I mean, Brevin Jordan, I said this before, he just needs to be on the field.
Yeah, yeah. I think he just couldn't kill himself at this time. It's like, maybe he could have taken a jump if he ran like a 4.5 or something. But I think he's basically just, you know, he's been in that second round range the whole time. And
yeah,
he ran well enough to stick there.
Yeah, I think he should be second round. That's my opinion, but he could be third round too. So who knows? I don't know how these guys make their decisions really. So, but he was very, he ran a 4.6 something.
2, I think, was his fastest. 4.62, 4.64, yeah.
4.64, I think.
I think he was disappointed. He said he was disappointed in his performance, the shot of the vertical. He was disappointed. He did a 34. He expected to get a 38. But I love his attitude. And the guy's a great athlete. He's a great athlete. That's it. So, I mean, come on. He's the second leading receiver behind a really, really talented Mike Harley, who is an actual receiver.
Right.
Okay. And, I think Brevin Jordan's going to be good in the NFL. That's what I think. And he went on and on and on about calling people stupid who think that he's a risk because he's injury prone or whatever. He was really upset. He was very honest. He said, man, this is a tough game, just like Jalen, but he was a little more blunt. Brevin was a little more blunt. He said, you know, you play with this shoulder injury, you play with that. People don't realize, you know, the injuries I've had, they don't really realize, which they don't tell you.
Yeah. So, before we pivot over to scrimmage talk, what do you think about Mark Richt getting to talk about all these guys he recruited? It was pretty fun, I thought.
Yeah, always fun. And you can tell Mark is so, so proud of anybody he coached. He'll never say a bad word. That's all I noticed. He'll never say about anybody, which I love. He just wants the best for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Let's wrap up with some scrimmage talk before we pivot over and throw to your interview with WLRN. Xavier Restrepo, kind of the breakout star. It sounds like you wrote about him on Tuesday. What's the buzz about him coming out of that scrimmage?
Well, the buzz is, and it's interesting because he also had a fantastic scrimmage last year. He had 9 catches for 144 yards and 2 touchdowns. Okay, can't do much better than that. In your first spring scrimmage, I've heard a couple coaches talk about him and saying the guy is just so competitive and such a tough little player. I don't know, I'm not sure. But I think he's listed as 5'10 and 196.
He's a little by football standards.
He's a little shorter than that. And I can't believe he weighs 196, but maybe he does. And Gervin Hall, safety Gervin Hall, said yesterday, I believe, that Restrepo said gave him problems in pass concepts. He said he really opened his eyes this spring. He scored on a 70-yard Oh, reverse. That was last year in the scrimmage, 70-yard reverse. He's just explosive plays. He didn't play, you know, last year. I think he only had one catch, which
he did not play a whole lot.
Yeah, he had one catch for 12 yards last year, you know, and I think you'd hoped that we're going to see him more this season. They do have a lot of receivers. But I think for me, though, the holy wow thing was, I wasn't as shocked about Xavier as I was pleasantly surprised for UM's sake about Jake Garcia, the freshman, you know, the new freshman quarterback, and Tyler Van Dyke, the second-year freshman, because Jake Garcia completed 78.9% of his passes. And he didn't just throw a few passes. He was 15 of 19. That's pretty good for 188 yards and a touchdown. Now, Tyler Van Dyke, second-year freshman, or I guess you could say a redshirt freshman.
Redshirt freshman, yeah.
10 of 15, which is 66.6%, also great, for 114 yards and a touchdown. Now, there were two picks. We don't know. UM will never say who threw the picks. You know, was it Jake? Was it Tyler? Yeah. Is it Peyton Matoka, who's also in there, but he's not going to win the job? And or was it or win the backup job, I should say? Or was it Ryan Risk, right? A walk-on. I mean, they all played, so we don't know who threw the picks. You know, we don't know how short the little passes were and how much of it. You know, remember they don't get tackled. We said that last week. You know, so
right.
They're a little more confident in throwing. They're not as nervous. But I mean, it's pretty good. Those are pretty amazing stats. So to me, that was the most heartening thing for UM's sake as De'Aaron King rehabs from his torn ACL.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this right before we started recording, that it's important that these guys play well just because we don't know what De'Aaron's. Kind of, you know, I think everyone's saying the right things. Everyone's saying they're optimistic about what De'Aaron is going to be ready for Alabama, all that stuff. But it's the reason we keep talking about quarterbacks, because this team has a chance to be really, really good. Obviously with De'Aaron King, but if he's not 100% or re-injures his knee or gets hurt some other way because of the knee is not quite 100%, they need these guys to be good. And that's still just like the number one. That's the most important thing that's going to come out of this spring is finding that next quarterback to be behind De'Aaron. I think that and the wide receivers and the defensive ends. It's a reason those are kind of the three things we keep talking about. We didn't really learn a whole lot about the defense. It doesn't sound like from the scrimmage, but from the offense, it's like good signs basically.
Yeah. You heard a lot of good things about the offense. Usually in these scrimmages, the defense prevails. But I mean.
But, you know, they're not tackling. And like,
yeah, and we know the offense is ahead anyway. I mean, right? And we are concerned about the linebacker play. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure till you see it, till you actually see it. Everybody keeps talking about Corey Flagg, but just – you know, how good are they?
Yeah. Yeah. They need one of those Avery Huffs or someone to pop as another guy. Anything else interesting? They're going on break for a week basically because of Easter right now. Anything else interesting that has stood out to you from this final week of practice before? It's not quite the midpoint, I guess, of spring, but we're, you know, it's kind of a good, I'm sure they're going to kind of use this as like a kind of a midway assessment point for the next, before they have these last two thirds of practice or whatever it is.
Yeah. And remember they'll have, you know, they will have another scrimmage, and Manny, we don't know when, but Manny said it's next week. So Manny Diaz says next week. So I'm sure it's going to be sometime at the end of next week after they come back. They don't get back till Wednesday, I think. So, We met today. We met on Wednesday. Jalen Rivers for the first time. I know you've talked to him in recruiting. Oakley out of Oak Leaf High. Is that Chance Williams or
Ian? Chance Williams came in.
Chance Williams and Yeah, right. And
Shaq Quarterman. Yeah, went
there. Shaq Quarterman went there too. Anyway, Jalen Rivers is, as you or Barry or Jackson already wrote about, he's always been a tackle in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time since park ball, since youth ball, he's playing guard. So he's playing left guard and he's batting that with Ja'Kai Clark, who will probably start Ja'Kai Clark. But great kid to talk to, as you know, very, very smart, big, but he's, defensive tackle Jared Harrison Hunt said that he was very hard to move. He hits very hard. He was talking about Jalen Rivers. And Jalen was fun to talk to. He's up to 325 pounds, but actually he's down to 325 pounds. He said he came to UM at 340 pounds, and he thought that would be enough, 325, and the coaches want him now to get to 315
mm-hmm.
to make it quicker and stuff. So he's a very upbeat, smart kid, and I think he's for sure he's going to be a starter one day, right?
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like of the the next generation of offensive linemen that we have not necessarily seen yet, like the Isaiah Walker, Jalen Rivers, Michael McLaughlin, a couple other guys in that group, and some guys coming in the midway, some big recruits. Seems like he's like the one guy who really has a chance to maybe crack the starting lineup this year, right? Like we kind of know, like we've said it a lot, they have seven guys coming back who started at least one game last year, plus Navon. You're going to have Navon at right guard, some combination of Navon, Scaife, Jared Williams on the right side of the line, Zion Nelson locked in at left tackle, Gaynor locked in at center. That left guard spot is the one that it kind of feels like remains a real open competition. Again, we haven't seen anything, but just based off what people are saying, and it seems like that's the spot where Jalen Rivers has a chance to push to start potentially in the fall. Like that would not, I don't think that would surprise anyone at this point.
No, I don't know. If I were going to make a guess, I'd say probably they start Ja'Kai.
Yeah, but I mean, he's probably the favorite, but he's the one. Well, Rivers is the one guy who has a chance, I think, to like supplant.
I agree. One
of the incumbent starters.
And he's, you know, the offensive line. I know they like to keep the guys in there.
Miami has not been shy about moving guys in and out the last couple of years.
No, they haven't. If there's somebody really good, they try to keep them in there. But let's face it. Okay. Now, Navon Donaldson, I mean, I know there are different places and stuff, but he's going to get tired. He is. He's going to get tired for sure. He hasn't played in a game in a long time. Guys do get tired, and I think it helps when they rotate them in and out. I do. And also, Jalen Rivers has definitely cross-trained. I know a lot of them
do. Guard and tackle. Yep.
Yes, he's been – and both sides. He's played both sides, right and left. So I think that's smart because one guy gets hurt and boom, they can put him in a tackle.
Yeah, it sounds like at worst he's going to be like the sixth or seventh guy. So
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I like him.
He's going to have a role. All right. Let's, you can follow Susan on Twitter at S Miller Degnan. Again, Miami's off for the next couple of days, but, she'll have you covered when they're back at practice. You can follow me on Twitter at DB Wilson too. Now let's take a listen to Susan's interview with WLRN about Howard Schnellenberger.
What was the first meeting that you ever had, and what were the circumstances when you met Coach Schnellenberger?
I can't even remember the very first time. It had to be a lot of years ago because I've met him so many times, and we've spoken on the phone so many times. I've been in his office when, you know, when he was the head of the FAU program, and he's just a treasure. I mean, he was just a treasure. Every time anyone had the, you know, honor to meet him, he, that voice, you know, that baritone, bass, whatever voice, beautiful, so deep. You couldn't be, you were held captive by it. The mustache, you know, the thick mustache, the sincerity. He was very in tune with whomever he was, you know, talking to, and really down to earth and honest and frank and very funny. He told you what he felt. He did have a big ego, but he was real honest and a great psychologist, I guess you could say. He convinced a lot of great kids to go to the University of Miami. He was just I love talking to him.
You know, he came at a time when the team was actually being considered for being disbanded. It was such a terrible team. But what was it about him that he could foster so much support and confidence in the school and in players and everybody around him to build a winner?
His vision, his thoughts, what, you know, he was convincing. He made a list for the administration of, you know, the football program's assets and liabilities, because UM, I guess, had been talking about dropping down to Division I AA. And I think he went to the administration. And this, I took this out of Barry Jackson's obituary, but it's amazing. And he said that, again, what the school considered liabilities were actually strengths. Well, the first thing he said was UM had the greatest stadium in the South in the Orange Bowl. And the administration, of course, thought that was the worst stadium. It was too big. It wasn't on campus. Okay. But Howard said, nope, it's the best. And the second thing he said was that UM had, you know, the best schedule a college team could have. They played Notre Dame, Florida, Florida State, Penn State. Everyone knows that that's a great thing if you're building a program. I mean, you might get beat a few times, but you also might pull off some upsets, which, of course, Schnellenberger did. And, of course, the administration thought, no, that's a bad thing. We need to play weaker teams, right? And then the third thing he said was that the state, you know, Howard created the state of Miami, quote unquote, which was the South Florida, which was the state of Miami was Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. And that's where he did his amazing recruiting. He just did everything he said he was going to do, but that's how he kind of worked his way in. And whatever Howard said, he was convincing.
He was. I remember when he went to help build the football program at Florida Atlantic University. And I talked to him, you know, over a span of years, I talked to him a few times, and he was convinced that he could turn them into a national champion. But why didn't he succeed as much there?
Howard Schnellenberger, first of all, he gets this great stadium built, which, I mean, UM played there, and, you know, and I covered a game there, and it's a beautiful stadium. And it's that he could do that, number one, was incredible. And, you know, the Owls were in Division I AA before he transitioned them into the FBS, which is, you know, the major college football, which, you know, University of Miami plays in. And FAU started playing in 2001. And within 2 years, Lewis, they made it to the national semifinals of the Division I AA before losing.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like he didn't have success. He built a team from scratch and built the stadium and helped, you know, create a very successful program. Obviously, he had said to me, we'll win a national championship in my lifetime. And I always thought, all right, coach, well, you know, I'd love to see that day. When you think about the great athletes and great coaches from South Florida, how should we remember his legacy?
Extremely caring. Extremely respectful, loved his family so much, which to me is fantastic. You're a football coach, you never hear about the other stuff. A winner in all respects.